This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the crisis in Cameroon's Anglophone regions continues to escalate. In a new video, a regional government official kidnapped by armed separatists says he will be executed if the government does not reveal the whereabouts of 47 detained separatist leaders.
That's Bunky Edwin Kinzeka reporting. Full details coming up.
Oh, well, also, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is wrapping up his five-nation tour of Africa with stops today in Chad and Nigeria. And thanks to widespread anti-poaching efforts and some help from the U.S. wildlife, protection in Kenya has improved dramatically in recent years.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is wrapping up his five-nation trip to Africa a little early with whirlwind stops today in Chad and Nigeria. Tillerson had been scheduled to stay tonight in Nigeria. Instead, he returns to Washington several hours ahead of schedule to deal with pressing matters, including preparations for President Donald Trump's planned meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. U.S. officials said Tillerson has recovered since canceling his scheduled Saturday in Kenya because he wasn't feeling well. During his stop in Chad, Tillerson said the U.S. may soon lift travel restrictions on the country's citizens, which that Trump imposed in October. He says Chad's government has taken steps to strengthen control over its own passports and improve information sharing.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson spent much of his trip bolstering security alliances on a continent increasingly turning to China for aid and trade. Early in his trip, Tillerson said that African countries should be careful not to forfeit their sovereignty when they accept loans from Beijing. Ayelewo Ayewo is a professor of law at the University of Lagos. He told reporter Mike Mbonye that China's approach to Africa is in part a backlash to Western practices, which often put conditions regarding governance and human rights on aid and investment projects. China's approach, however, may become a problem, he says, because some African countries have become dependent on Chinese loans.
Now, contrast that with that of the Chinese government that comes in. It says it respects the sovereignty of African states. It's not going to go into issues of governance. It's not going to go into issues of corruption or human rights. And it's based on development. So while you find the Western approach being based on foreign policy, the Chinese approach is based on economic policy, and it has been administered by their Ministry of Commerce and their Exim Bank. So what this has meant is that they have given loans without looking at the state of the African countries, without looking at their practices, and it's an exchange of loans for commodities. Now, what this has meant is that within a very short time, African countries have come to be dependent on Chinese loans.
What happens if commodity prices, which help pay for the loans, collapse? How, for example, would Nigeria pay if petroleum prices drop? Is Nigeria or any other ECOWAS countries in danger of falling in a debt trap with China?
Now, I think we have to understand this debt trap. The way the Chinese government monitors this loan is not too transparent. You find examples of states like Nigeria taking loans, and then you take loans for particular projects, and even upon the completion of the loans, your debt profile is going high and high, and the project's completion time and the loan payment is tied to commodities and all that. So where your commodities, the prices go down, then of course your purchasing power and ability to repay becomes weakened. And this, in effect, will affect your debt profile. Take Nigeria, Ghana, and a lot. at the limit, at the least, by 2017, and most of them were indebted to Chinese government with projects beyond $3.8 billion. And Chinese government has projected that the loans is going to be given to African countries by 2025 will be in trillions. So what it means in essence is that instead of having a debt profile going down, the debt profile is going up.
That was Ayewo, a professor of law at the University of Lagos. He was speaking with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos.
Also, wildlife protection in Kenya has improved dramatically in recent years thanks to widespread anti-poaching efforts, including some help from the U.S. But as U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visits Kenya, conservationists there say the U.S. lifting a ban on imports of some African animal trophies sends the wrong message. VOA's Daniel Sheriff reports from Nairobi.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson praised Kenya Wildlife Service officials Sunday as he toured a U.S.-supported forensics laboratory just outside of Nairobi National Park. The laboratory, opened in 2015 with help from USAID and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, performs DNA analysis of illicit wildlife products and weapons used in animal poaching. Tillerson told reporters with him on his first trip to Africa that the U.S. considered wildlife conservation vitally important.
You know, Kenya is really a leader in preventing trafficking, in particular, and illegal poaching. And this has been very interesting in terms of what this lab now allows them to do, to also track outside of Kenya where the trafficking networks are going. And that's really the key, is shut it all down out there as well. So people are not going to, you couldn't get it out of Kenya, doesn't mean you're safe. And so apparently it's really important.
Laboratory officials told Tillerson their work led to 50 prosecutions in their first 2 years of operation. Much of the poached and smuggled animal parts throughout Africa make their way to Kenya's port in Mombasa, known as the world's hub for ivory smuggling. But Kenya has made fast progress cracking down on domestic poaching. Elephant poaching for ivory in Kenya has been reduced from a recent high of 103 killed in 2012 to 8 killed last year, says Tom Lalampa with the Northern Rangelands Trust, a USAID-supported program. Lalampa credits stepped-up community policing, rangers, and mobile response teams for cracking down on poachers.
And then also the legislation, the current wildlife law, is quite strong in terms of penalties, unlike before, which is good. I think also the Kenya Wildlife Service has also sort of geared up their efforts, have improved their efforts, and so things are working, but it's not yet time to celebrate.
Just ahead of Tillerson's arrival on the continent, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service overturned Obama-era restrictions on imports of some African hunting trophies, including parts of lions and elephants, such as ivory. The agency was acting on a court's ruling on a lawsuit brought by Safari Club International and the National Rifle Association. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals in December found the Obama administration did not follow proper procedure when implementing its ban. The decision lifts a blanket ban on imports of lion and elephant trophies from six African nations: Botswana, Namibia, South Africa, Tanzania, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. Imports of the endangered animal parts will be decided instead on a case-by-case basis. Kenya has banned trophy hunting since 1977, and many conservationists, like Lalampa, oppose the U.S. decision.
That sends a very wrong signal in this country, because the communities are working tirelessly to try and stop poaching from the source, to try and ensure that there's no poaching. And then all of a sudden, when such a policy is, announcement is made, it really hurts, it really discourages those communities who are taking care of this wildlife 24 hours a day.
Trump at the time tweeted it would be very hard to change his mind that trophy hunting, what he called a horror show, in any way helps conservation of elephants or any other animal. Paula Kahumbu, a Kenyan conservationist with Wildlife Direct, notes the U.S. was instrumental in pushing China to ban the trade in ivory. But the U.S., she says, is sending confusing messages that started when it expanded the ivory trade with Zambia and Zimbabwe.
These two countries are renowned for corruption. They're renowned for their ivory disappearing from their national stockpiles and ending up in China and Thailand and other countries. So that's one big problem. They've created a loophole. But secondly, the idea that it's okay to hunt these animals and that you're helping those countries through hunting is, I think, an idea that should be questioned rigorously.
Big game trophy hunting advocates argue the high fees they pay, up to $100,000 per safari, directly benefit conservation efforts. But critics of trophy hunting, like Kahumbu, say most of that money goes to organizers of the hunts, while little reaches the local level. Daniel Sheriff, VOA News, Nairobi.
The mayor of a town in Ethiopia's border with Kenya says residents are on edge after Ethiopian security forces shot and killed 10 people and injured 11 others. The military unit in the town of Moyale has expressed regret and promised to investigate the incident in southern Oromoya. Moyale's mayor, Aschalo Yohannes, told VOA Amharic Service the gunfire began Saturday when security forces stopped and shot a young man on a motorbike. It is not clear why the man was stopped, but Yohannes says he may have been participating in a peaceful protest. The Ethiopian government says the attack was a mistake. The military says it was told the Oromoya Liberation Front, a militant opposition group, was operating in the area. VOA's calls to government officials were not returned. Multiple sources told VOA that the attack resulted in hundreds of people fleeing their homes, with many heading into Kenya.
The crisis in Cameroon's Anglophone regions continues to escalate. In a new video, a regional government official kidnapped by armed separatists says he will be executed if the government does not reveal the whereabouts of 47 detained separatist leaders. Moki Edwin Kinsica reports from Yaoundé.
The video has been circulating on social media in Cameroon since Saturday and has been shared by the accounts of several prominent separatist members. The video begins with a seal and the words Ambazonian Defense Forces. Ambazonia is the name separatist groups have given to Cameroon's English-speaking northwest and southwest regions, both gripped by a strike and violent protest since late 2016. The video shows Aaron Animbom, the delegate for social affairs in the northwest. Animbom looks unkempt and speaks in a dark room. He says his captors demand to know the whereabouts of 47 separatist leaders arrested in Nigeria and not seen in public since their extradition to Cameroon at the end of January.
Because they have given me 48 hours that I will be sacrificed if these leaders are not shown to be alive.
When contacted by VOA, Cameroon government spokesman Issa Chiruma declined to comment on the video. Animbom was abducted February 26 in the northwestern town of Batibo. He was abducted barely 2 weeks after Joseph Namata, the most senior government official in the Batibo subdivision, was taken from his residence. Namata has not been seen since. The government and security forces have called for assistance from the local population in locating the two missing officials. At the heart of the crisis is the tension between Cameroon's French-speaking majority and the two English-speaking regions, where many feel their language is being pushed out of schools, courts, and government. Violence has intensified in the Anglophone regions since Nigeria detained and extradited the separatist activists, including leader Ayuk Tabe Julius. Tabe declared himself president of the so-called English-speaking Republic of Ambazonia. The government says hundreds of people, including 30 policemen and soldiers, have been killed this year. On Friday, Paul Atanganji, permanent secretary of Cameroon's Security Commission, announced that armed separatists had tried to kidnap children from a school in the English-speaking northwest. Nji said one soldier and two attackers were killed in the shootout. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News. Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Sierra Leone's main opposition party has taken a slight lead in the country's presidential race, with 75% of votes counted, but with outright victory still out of reach, candidates are looking to form coalitions in the likely event of a runoff election. The Sierra Leone People's Party candidate, retired General Julius Madebayo, holds 43.3% of the vote, so far edging in front of the ruling All People's Congress Party candidate, former Foreign Minister Samora Camara, who has 42.6%. A candidate needs 55% to win in the first round. Over 3 million people registered to vote in last Wednesday's election, which is one of the closest in the country's history. Current President Ernest Bai Koroma of the APC must step down after serving two terms.
Migrants in Paris plea for more assistance from the government as a 30-year-old migrant from Sudan who traveled to France through Libya across the Mediterranean died on the streets of Paris near a migrant reception center. Authorities have not said what caused his death, but NGOs say he shared a small tent with three other migrants and may have died from the cold. French authorities have taken over food distribution to migrants around Calais, leaving just two state-run food distribution points, whereas before, aid groups had five. I spoke with reporter Catherine Field about the migrant death and the latest migrant developments.
Thursday of last week, a 30-year-old migrant from the Sudan, all we know is his name was Karim, he died on the street. Apparently, he had been sharing a very small tent nearby the reception center for migrants in Paris. He was found almost dead in his tent. They took him out of the tent, his fellow migrants, and tried to resuscitate him. They just did not have any success at all with that. The police and the ambulance came again, still no success. It just proved a point, not just to the migrants, but also the NGOs that are working there, which is that these people just are not getting enough help. We're talking about a 30-year-old man, a young man, who died within a stone's throw of an area that's been set up by the state to help migrants. So clearly there isn't enough help getting out, they're saying. On the other side, the French state is saying we really don't need to have a big presence. The NGOs are saying, no, look, you come around with us and you'll see that there are 1,000 migrants sleeping rough on the streets of Paris and they all need help. And it really was a very emotional ceremony on Sunday morning at the area nearby where Karim died. A lot of the NGOs got together, a lot of the neighbors got together and held a small ceremony for this man because people don't really know very much about him.
Looking at another development regarding the migrants, I understand that French authorities have taken over food distribution to migrants around Calais.
Indeed. Tuesday of last week, the French state took over that distribution. This followed a lot of violence around the various food distribution points in Calais and Dunkirk along that area. So they said to the NGOs, look, you pull out, we know how to do this. And they've really concentrated it in two specific areas on the edge of Calais. They've got two distribution points, whereas the NGOs had five. I think if you are asking how you could describe how this has gone, I think possibly the best word to describe it would be clumsy. For example, the first day that the state started giving out the food coincided with when authorities came in and cleared away 20 tents, which belonged to some of the migrants who'd gone off to get food at the food trucks. So a lot of the migrants have now said, well, we're not going because on the one hand, we have the state's representatives, the police who are coming and taking our tents, and then we've also got the state giving us food, and we just can't trust anyone here. And on top of that, the state decided to put these two, what are essentially food trucks, food vans, in an industrial estate. So they're on the edge of town in an industrial estate. It's in a fenced-off area, and there's razor wire on top of the fences. So it seems to the migrants, just looking at it from the outside, that these are just almost like prisons. They're suspicious of what's going on there, and they just prefer to go hungry.
So what do you see is going to happen as a result of this?
The NGOs have got together with the prefect, Monsieur le Préfet, who is the state's representative in Calais. They had a meeting with him on Monday morning. The state has said, well, okay, maybe we'll take the razor wire down from the top of the fences. We'll make it a bit more accommodating so as the migrants will be less suspicious of going into the area.
That was reporter Catherine Field in Paris.
Women worldwide have less access to jobs than men, and those who do get work are paid less and receive fewer benefits than men, says the International Labour Organization in a new report. The study, World Employment and Social Outlook, Trends for Women 2018, a global snapshot, was issued in connection with International Women's Day last week. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva the launch of the ILO study.
The International Labour Organization reports notable progress has been made in improving women's prospects for work over the past 20 years. Its findings on labour trends, however, indicate much remains to be done to close the persistent inequalities suffered by women. Globally, the ILO finds only 6 women are employed for every 10 men with jobs. It reports the gap in gender equality is less in the wealthiest parts of the world than in the poorest, and the gap is significantly wider in the emerging middle-income countries. Regionally, the report shows women fare worst in the Arab states and northern Africa, where unemployment rates for women are twice as large as men's. It says Southern Asia runs a close second in lack of gender parity. ILO Research Department Director Damien Grimshaw tells VOA social and cultural issues hamper women's ability to find paid employment in these regions.
I think all too often we might blame some of the variety in women's participation on women's expectations and ambitions, when in fact there are still too many obstacles. Social norms and other cultural norms which impinge upon the rights and entitlements of women in the world of work, which needs to be looked at.
Grimshaw notes that social and cultural issues as obstacles to female employment also are entrenched, but to a lesser extent, in the United States and Europe. The ILO acknowledges another critical issue which has received scant attention is that of violence and harassment in the workplace. The ILO says this unacceptable situation will, for the first time, be addressed at its annual conference in June. ILO officials say discussions will focus on enacting a possible international treaty aimed at preventing violence and harassment. If this happens, they say it will be a game changer. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Hayes Wuhibi in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson is on a five-nation tour of Africa, and high on his agenda are talks on counterterrorism and advancing mutual ties with nations on the continent. On his first trip to Africa as America's top diplomat, he is expected to meet with leaders from Chad, Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, and Nigeria. U.S.-Africa relations is the topic on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.